The show is Live and Local. It's your connection to local music and more. And today's show, actually, will cover two competing events. So by the conclusion of the program, you're just going to have to decide which of them you're going to do. The first part of the conversation will take place with Rudolf Hocken, who is professor of viola at the University of Illinois School of Music. He also is pianist and composer. And so he's giving a recital Sunday night at 7:30. And then the later portion of the show is with a member of the Hot Club of Detroit, a wonderful jazz group that is coming to the Iron Post in Urbana, also Sunday night. And that starts at 7 o'clock. And we'll hear from their new CD here on Live and Local. Stay tuned. That was music by Rudolf Hocken, the opening movement called Possum Trot, from his concerto for five-string viola, and Mr. Hocken himself performing on the five-string viola pomposa. Julian Benichot, I'm not sure how he pronounces his name, conductor of an otherwise unnamed orchestra. It was recorded by the late John Shainoff at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. And Rudolf Hocken is my guest on this portion of Live and Local because he's going to be giving a recital Sunday night at Smith Music Hall on the U of I campus in Urbana. It starts at 7:30, and he's part one of the show today. And thanks very much for coming in and sharing your music. That was a piece that I enjoyed performing with the Prairie Ensemble, and you. How do you say that conductor's last name?
Benichou. Oh. Well, he's French.
Okay.
Julien Benichou.
He looks like he could be, and so there you've confirmed that. And you've got on this particular recording, this is Rudolf Hocken Concertos, with also the clarinet concerto and the oboe concerto, and you're going to be doing some music of yours on Sunday's recital?
Yes, I'm going to be playing the piano on a piece of mine. Actually, Stefan Milenkovic will be the violinist there. And this is a piece I wrote when I was 14. It's called Für Fritz, and it's a tribute to Fritz Kreisler. So it has that sort of old Viennese style, salon style that Kreisler was famous for.
Did you record that piece? We have a couple of recordings done when you were young, or younger than you are now.
Yeah, younger. Well,
I wonder if that might be on one of them.
It could be. I have it on my website. That's where.
Well, I might have to go look.
Yeah.
While we play something else from the program, you've been on the faculty for how long now?
No.
Long time.
14 years.
Really? Is that all?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I grew up here, so it seems.
Well,
like
I know, but I mean, I've been down here for 19 years.
Well, let's see, 1996.
And you've been the faculty.
1996, that's when I got
That's
here.
When you joined
yeah.
the faculty? Are you serious? Yeah. Who was the... Oh, I do remember,
Emmanuel
that's right.
Vardy was...
Emmanuel Vardy, yeah. I forgot about that. And before that was Michael McClellan.
Yeah.
I think, wow, I forgot that you had joined the faculty after I got here. How about that? Yeah, but you grew up in Champaign, Urbana.
Yeah.
Born in Urbana.
Born at Carl Hospital.
Carl Hospital. Right. And how long have you been composing? I mean, at least since you're 14, apparently.
Well, I started when I was 6. And we were all forced to play the violin when we were 6. I have 5 brothers and sisters, and so each of us would practice the violin for an hour from 6 to 7 each morning. So it was a pretty chaotic kind of household there. But
was that before or after breakfast?
That was actually before breakfast. Then and then we would eat and run off to school. But then I actually became interested in music, and especially in composition. And so I started composing a few months after I started playing the violin, then I added the piano and the flute and the cello and the oboe and all those instruments to my daily routine.
And it says here that, according to your bio on the University of Illinois School of Music website, you conducted your first orchestral works, conducted them at age 10.
Yeah, that was with the the University of Illinois Civic Orchestra, which no longer exists, but that that orchestra was under the direction of Charles Delaney, who was actually a flute professor here. And then I also conducted the Champaign-Urbana Symphony, working with Paul Vermel. I conducted them at their children's concerts, and then several orchestras around the country.
Still, when you were a kid at that point?
Yeah.
Yeah, how did you get the gigs outside of Champaign-Urbana?
Well, those all came from people in town who knew people out of town. So they had connections elsewhere and would send them my music or recordings, and then they would invite me. And so,
because you were the child prodigy of sorts, as a composer and player, I guess. And you've never ceased being a child, I have observed over the years.
Thank you.
And never ceased being a composer and a fairly adventuresome performer. If you were to describe the way you play the viola, or the viola pomposa for that matter, as distinct from other violists. We can't say other viola pomposists, because there's no other such person.
Well, there are a few.
Are there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll get into that in a moment. But because it seems to me you do have a different way of playing than some other violists I've heard. But how would you describe it?
Well, I think partly because I'm a composer, I actually approach the music from the composer's point of view and use the instrument to bring out the music rather than using the music to show off my viola playing, if that makes sense. So I'll just do whatever it takes on the instrument to express what I feel the music should express, rather than taking the music and deciding how it would sound, how it would suit my instrument best.
Now, see, if we actually had your instrument here, and unfortunately we couldn't get into our performance studio this week for scheduling reasons, it would have been really interesting for me to put you on the spot and say, okay, now play some portion of some piece as the typical performer and then play it as a composing performer.
Yes.
And see if you could make a difference.
Yeah, I mean, when I play Bach suites, some people say it takes about 15 seconds before they recognize which piece I'm playing. So,
and now why is that, do you think?
Well, because my tempos are unusual. I mean, of course, these music has very few tempo markings
in Bach.
Yeah, I mean, very rarely does it say something in there, and then there's sort of an endless number of treatises and theories on how it should be performed. So I just I play it just the way it suits me best and the way I feel that I can bring out the music or bring out the intention of the composer the best. And so it starts sounding a bit eccentric to some people.
Well, the intention of the composer is best you can determine it through your own brain several hundred years removed.
Exactly.
From the composer. Well, I know one of the colleagues who you have on your recital, Stefan Milenkovic, has said on this at your very microphone that, you know, he thinks you should play Bach more or less however you want, which really would get the hackles of many people.
Well, one thing that if somebody doesn't like, in the rare case that somebody doesn't like the way I play Bach, I tell them, you know, there are plenty of recordings of people playing it the way you do like and just listen to them. So
that's a good point. Why just do it the same way?
Yeah, I mean, it's not as though, I mean, if I were the only person in the world playing that particular piece, I would feel obligated maybe to present it exactly as it was written and so forth. But since there are, you know, hundreds of recordings of the same music, people can people have their choice of what to listen to. So I don't make any special effort to play it differently from other people. I just don't make an effort to play it the same way either.
That's an important distinction, yeah. I think. Well, and we might get to a little Bach later. You're playing Bach on this recital.
Yes.
The famous Chaconne.
Yes.
Rather long piece. We might get to that. I didn't pull it into the studio just now. You also have some music of Shostakovich and who else on the
Hummel.
Johann Nepomuk Hummel.
Yes.
You know, the first time I ever heard that name was when I was taking horn lessons with, back then, the principal horn of the Baltimore Symphony, and his wife, whose name I am blanking on, but somebody had, I guess we were listening to something in the living room, and she came into the living room and, you know, wanted to know what it was, and I guess it was, of course, we said Hummel, but you being of German abstraction, say it more correctly, and she said, "Oh, Nepomuk Hummel! I love Nepomuk Hummel." That being his rather common middle name back at the day, but that was my first introduction, and I always thought that was kind of funny that she loved Nepomuk Hummel.
Yeah.
And I mean, most people haven't heard any music of his besides the trumpet concerto.
Yeah, it's. I mean, he isn't all that well known as a composer now, but there were quite a few 19th century composers who admired his music greatly. Schumann and Chopin, they both actually studied his piano compositions and learned a lot from them. And he's just not as brilliant as Mozart or Beethoven. So, you
know. Well, when Victor Geronimo, my colleague here, and I were talking when I said that you were going to be coming in and you're doing something of Hummel on the program, on the recital, and he commented that he's really enjoyed just about all of the pieces of Hummel that we have received here in the last 10 years. There's a series of recordings on Chandos, I think, of a lot of his music, and you hear this stuff and you wonder, well, why isn't anybody playing it? So this is what piece of his?
Well, it's a viola sonata in E-flat major, and it sounds a lot like Mozart, and it's I like to sort of think of it in terms of Mozart operas. So when I play the piece, I imagine some kind of operatic drama going on, like a comic opera.
Unfortunately, we don't have a recording of that one, so I can't share it. So you're going to have to record it, I guess.
Yes. Yeah, I will.
Unfortunately, John Chainoff won't be able to do the recording.
Yeah, that's
sad. Yeah, for those who knew John, but I'm sure if you knew John, you probably knew this already, but he passed on just a couple of months ago, I guess, by now. Really quite unexpectedly, and that's a great tragedy. Sun-hee Kim, is she accompanying that piece?
Yes, so she's playing the Shostakovich and the Hummel.
I'm not supposed to say accompanying, by the way.
No, that's...
collaborating with you.
Yeah. Or I guess I'm collaborating with her.
Collaborating.
Yeah, especially the Hummel, the piano part might be more prominent than the viola part, in fact. Or maybe they're equal, but it's certainly not an accompanying.
Certainly the pianist will have more notes.
Yes.
Almost always.
Exactly.
But then she's playing with 10 fingers, and you're playing... Well, with one hand, essentially, and four fingers, well, however you want to put it. Talk about the Shostakovich a little bit. We do have this here, and I don't know this piece at all.
Well, it was his very last composition.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah. So when we play the last notes of the sonata, that we will be playing the very last notes he ever wrote.
Will it be the last piece on the program?
No, it's actually the last piece before intermission. It's kind of an intensely, I don't know if it's a depressing piece, but it's very, very, it's emotionally draining. And I thought maybe not, it's better not to end the program with something so emotionally draining, but kind of have an intermission and then play some Für Fritz afterwards.
That reminds me of the Prairie Ensemble years ago ended, in fact, the first half of a concert with the string orchestra rendition of his eighth string quartet, which was similarly emotionally draining. And there was a mother who came up to me at the little reception at the half, and had brought her young daughter, and she wanted to know, was the Mozart G minor symphony, which was on the second half, was it going to be anything like that Shostakovich piece? Because her daughter was crying. Which was one of the most profound comments, questions in this case, that I'd ever heard about a piece or a performance. I thought, well, we kind of did our job, I guess. I'm sorry she was crying, but she obviously felt the music, and I assured her that, no, it wasn't going to be anything like that.
Yeah, so...
So here's
it's a similarly gripping piece as the...
Gripping, there
gripping.
You go.
Gripping, that's the word I was looking for.
Well, this is the violist Yuri Bashmet performing, we'll hear the second movement, or part of it anyway, of Shostakovich's viola. A sonata for violin and piano, the pianist...
I'm not sure how to say...
What did I say, violin?
Yeah, you said violin. How dare you?
I apologize deeply. The viola and piano, and I don't know how to say the pianist... name, I'm sorry, Mikhail Muntian or something.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
To that effect. Here on Live and Local. Just a sampling of the second movement of the Sonata for Viola and Piano by Dmitri Shostakovich, violist Yuri Bashmet with pianist Mikhail Muntian here on Live and Local. Mr. Rudolf Hakan, Professor Rudolf Hakan, is going to be presenting the complete work on his recital Sunday night at Smith Hall on the University of Illinois campus in Urbana, 7:30. It's a free program and includes music by Hummel, his viola sonata, the Bach Chaconne, and some music by Rudolf Hakan, and also music by Louis Saul.
Mm-hmm.
And who is he?
He's a composer from Tucson, Arizona.
And how do you know him?
Well, his daughter is my student here. She just started here as a freshman, and she showed me his sonatina, and I was very intrigued by it, and I asked him if I could perform it, and then he said yes, and not only that, he would actually travel up here and play it with me.
The photo here looks like a bit of a mountain man. Have you actually met him?
I have never personally met him. I think he might be more of a desert man down in Tucson.
Or John the Baptist type, very long hair and beard, and except John the Baptist wouldn't have glasses, probably. Pre-Ben Franklin and all.
Yeah.
And we, of course, we don't have any music of his, so people will have to just sort of give a sample. Sounds like a great program with a lot of variety and some interesting music that people are not likely to have heard. And I wish you the best of luck with it. Stefan Milenkovic, as you mentioned, is going to be appearing on there as a violin solist for your piece, for Fritz. And then the Louis Paul and pianist Sun-hee Kim. And you're playing the viola pomposa, which briefly is?
It's a combined viola and violin. So it has the strings of both.
So it's five strings?
Yes. And it sounds better than a viola or a violin.
So. If you do say so yourself.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, all right. Well, Rudolf, thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Have a fine recital. And we're going to go out with the final portion of... your clarinet concerto, written for and performed here by clarinetist William King, and conducted ensemble conducted by Julien Benichoux. How did I do with that?
Benichoux?
Something like
that. Yeah.
On Live and Local. Stay tuned for the Hot Club of Detroit.
Thank you.
final movement of Rudolf Hakan's Clarinet Concerto. William King, the clarinetist, Julien Benichou conducting the ensemble here on Live and Local. Our broadcast today is made possible in part by a grant from the Meredith Foundation dedicated to supporting the musical arts in performance and presentation, and by Sinfonia da Camera presenting Brief Encounters at 7:30 p.m. on Saturday, September 18th in the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. Ian Hobson conducts and performs Rachmaninoff's Piano Concerto No. 2. More information is available at 333-6280. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. Just heard a tune called Noto Swing from by the Hot Club of Detroit from their new disc called It's About That Time, the composition by Lulu Reinhardt. And Hot Club of Detroit is going to be at the Iron Posts in downtown Urbana Sunday night at 7 o'clock. These guys are terrific. I've heard a few others of their CDs and have actually met one of their members a couple of times. And we have on the phone with us, en route between gigs, their rhythm guitarist, Paul Brady. Thanks for joining us, Paul.
Thanks, Kevin.
So where did you just play, and where are you headed next?
Last night we played in downtown Madison, Wisconsin, at a really nice outdoor event called Jazz at 5. And luckily the weather held up, and we had a great turnout. And now we are headed to Minneapolis to play with a singer that we've worked with over the years. She's a great singer from Minneapolis, Connie Evingston, who we're going to play with at the Dakota Jazz Club in Minneapolis.
So I gather you are on your pre-fall tour.
We're on a tour of the Midwest right now, and after this we do a couple dates in Canada, and then we head to the West Coast.
Wow, so how long are you going to be on the road?
I will not set foot home until October 5th, I think.
Wow, and how much of it are you driving?
We're driving in the Midwest, and then we'll drive to Canada, just in Ontario, and then we'll fly to the West Coast and drive from Seattle all the way down to L.A. with some stops in between.
Nice life.
I guess that's what we signed up for.
Yeah, apparently so. How long has the Hot Club of Detroit been around?
I've been with the group since 2005, and it's gone through a couple personnel changes since then, but that's when we first signed with Mac Avenue Records, and our first record came out in 2006. But the group has been around for some time prior to that. A few years, so about 6 or 7 years.
In your current incarnation, talk a little bit about the origins of the group. You do make reference to Django Reinhardt pretty clearly in your description of yourselves, but also the quintet of the Hot Club of France, which I guess was his group.
Yeah, the group was founded by the lead guitarist, Evan Perry, and, it was really started as a way to perform music in the style of Django Reinhardt, and it's still that, but it evolved into, basically just a modern jazz group, and every guy in the band has a straight-ahead jazz background, and we try to just make music based on all our influences, and just, everybody brings something else to the table, and we certainly keep the Django Reinhardt sound in our playing all the time, but try to add a modern element to it.
So how would you describe basically the Django Reinhardt sound?
I mean, Django Reinhardt was a jazz musician, really like any other great jazz musician from that era, from the 30s, 40s, and 50s. He recorded in so many different formats. I mean, what he's probably most well known for is his playing with the Hot Club of France, which was at that time had a unique instrumentation of three guitars, upright bass and violin. The rhythm guitars sort of providing the percussive sound to that group. But after that, he worked in your basic straight ahead jazz combinations with piano and drums and horns and big bands and just like most of the well-known jazz musicians from that time.
So anything particular about the instrumentation of your group that harkens back to his?
Well, I would say that what keeps our sound steeped in the Django Reinhardt tradition is that we don't have a drummer. All our rhythmic and percussive elements to our sound come from the rhythm section of, you know, at this point, two guitars and an upright bass. So we work with that instrumentation and try to expand the possibilities of what can be done. Sort of sticking to that, no drummer instrumentation and see how far out we can take it.
And how about the use of an accordionist?
Well, the accordion is definitely something that is typically associated with Europe and European jazz and traditional French and European popular music. And strangely enough, we were able to encounter a jazz accordionist in Detroit when Evan was starting the group. This is pretty amazing. I guess it was just fate. Julian Labro, a jazz accordionist, ended up at Wayne State University where Evan was also studying jazz at the time, and they got together and started making music. And the accordion, Julian plays the button accordion, which is different from the keyboard accordion, which most people are used to. The accordion is really a great instrument, and it's very expressive, and you can do a lot with it, and it's especially, I think, a nice sound in our group, but really can be used in any sort of jazz setting. It reminds me of like a Hammond B3 organ almost. So the accordion definitely, I think, helps to give us that European Django sound, but at the same time, it's much more than that. It's an expressive instrument and can be beautifully used in any other jazz setting or really any music setting.
Well, Julian is the guy that I met last year. He's been in Urbana a number of times. He played at the Allerton Music Barn Festival here on the bandoneon in a tango opera by Astor Piazzolla, and then he actually played with the group that I conduct called the Prairie Ensemble in some music also by Piazzolla. And he was on this show live in our studio with Frank Vignola and his trio when they were here for the Krannert Center's El Nora Guitar Festival last year. So Julian's been to our community a number of times, and so I'm really looking forward to hearing you guys on Sunday. A reminder to listeners, we're talking with Paul Brady, who's a rhythm guitarist with the Hot Club of Detroit. They'll be at the Iron Post Sunday night at 7. And why don't we give us a listen to something from your CD, and then I want to talk about the focus of this CD or the idea of it in just a moment. We talked a bit ahead and about what we might play. Nostalgia in Times Square?
The inspiration for doing that tune actually comes from a French guitarist who's just this amazing guitarist. And if somebody had a gun to my head and said, Paul, who's the best guitarist in the world, I would have to say this guy. His name is Sylvain Luc, L-U-C, Sylvain Luc. And he had a recording with a trio out several years ago called Sud, in French means south, and that was the name of his trio, and I think that was also the name of the record. And the first track on that record was the Dizzy Gillespie song, A Night in Tunisia, and it was arranged in 5-4. And I always thought it would be cool to sort of kind of find another song by one of the great jazz composers and arrange it into 5/4 for our instrumentation. And the song that we ended up finding that worked well with our group and in that time signature is Nostalgia in Times Square by Charles Mingus. And that's the story behind this cut.
Okay, well, let's give it a listen. Nostalgia in Times Square, Mingus tune played by the Hot Club of Detroit. And it's Paul Brady's arrangement with, how do you say the last name, Andrew Kratzit?
Andrew Kratzit.
Kratzit. And this is from their disc called It's About That Time here on Live and Local. That was the Hot Club of Detroit, wonderful group out of, you guessed it, Detroit area. Their disc called It's About That Time, and the tune by Charles Mingus called Nostalgia in Times Square. Hot Club of Detroit's going to be at the Iron Post in downtown Urbana this coming Sunday evening at 7 o'clock. I recommend them very highly. It's not a really big club at the Iron Post, so get there early to make sure you can get a seat. We're talking on Live and Local right now with one of their members, Paul Brady, who's rhythm guitarist. And I note from your bio, we have something in common. We both studied conducting with Kenneth Kiesler.
Oh, wow.
When did you do that?
When I was I was living in Chicago at the time. And I'd finished my undergrad. I finished my undergrad at DePaul University in jazz studies, and I've always been, I guess I could only describe myself as a classical music fanatic, and I was just so interested in orchestral music that I started studying orchestra scores, and I started off with Mozart and some that were not quite as intimidating as, let's say, Stravinsky or, something like that. And I just became more and more interested until I started studying with a teacher in Chicago doing score study. And his name is Michael Lewonsky, and he's now on the faculty at DePaul University. And he's an excellent teacher and a great conductor. And he had studied with the famous Russian conductor Ilya Musin, and so we did a in addition to score study, also technique. And he sort of recommended that I go and take Ken's workshop in the summer in Maine at Madalmec, which you're probably aware of.
I went there the first summer they had it.
Yeah, so I did Maestro Kiesler's summer workshop in Maine, which was one of the most challenging musical experiences that I've ever gone through. It's definitely where I'm at now in my career as a musician and also a writer and a teacher. It just helped me immensely to be able to research and write about classical music. So that's sort of where I'm at right now, where that training is coming in handy.
So not doing any conducting just yet?
No, not professionally or anything like that. It's just something that I did for myself and always just keeping in mind that it would help with my music theory chops and just arranging and producing and classical music criticism. And so I kind of came at it from a different angle.
Well, I thought that was just kind of a neat coincidence there. And you
that's cool.
You play classical guitar as well.
There was a time. there was a time when I could call myself a classical guitarist. I haven't had the time to keep that up, but I really look forward to getting back into that after after these tours are over.
The idea of a rhythm guitar, for those who don't really know the difference between what Evan Perry is doing in your group as the band leader and lead guitarist, I guess, and what you do as the rhythm guitarist.
Mm-hmm. Well, rhythm guitar is something that goes way back to early jazz, and certainly Django Reinhardt made good use out of it and was an amazing rhythm guitarist. Definitely similar to the way Freddie Green of Count Basie, you know, most famous for playing with Count Basie's orchestra, in that, you know, rhythm guitar can really make, you know, that sort of four-on-the-floor swing rhythm guitar style can really make an ensemble swing harder. And at the same time, depending on what your instrumentation is, it might not be what you want. But for the Django Reinhardt, you know, the classic Django Reinhardt sound, the rhythm guitar is of paramount importance. And it's something that all the lead guitarists have to be able to do as well. And if you're a rhythm guitarist, it definitely helps to have the lead guitar chops to know how to better accompany the lead guitarist. So it's something that I love doing personally, and we're very well defined in our roles in the group. Evan and I, you know, he is always the lead guitarist, and I'm always the rhythm guitarist in this ensemble. And then we both do a fair amount of work in other ensembles, and just, you know, as freelance jazz guitarists. I've come to realize that it's not easy for many other guitarists who try to pick up this style, and I guess I'm sort of fortunate that in my very early days of practicing, I you know, when you're sort of young and you can learn things rapidly, I got into practicing that. So I think, you know, where I'm at now, if I had to start, you know, learning that style now, I think it would be a lot more difficult to do. So it's definitely its own thing.
I wanted to ask about a comment that's made on your website regarding the new CD. It's about that time. You're commenting about Django Reinhardt as a jazz improviser. And then you say, we don't approach our music as a gypsy jazz band, but 100% as a jazz group. And I wasn't quite sure where the gypsy comment came from. How does that relate to this CD?
It's gypsy jazz is a great, you know, subgenre that exists and has certainly been inspired by Django Reinhardt, but we don't really, we sort of have focused our attention more toward on being, you know, a jazz group and not really limiting ourselves to only playing the repertoire that has become associated with the gypsy jazz genre, which is great. And we do play some of that repertoire because we enjoy it, and we know that there are we have some fans that really love to hear that. And you know, gypsy jazz is you know, the musicians involved in that scene are incredible, and we're happy to be involved in that side of things as well. But we at the same time, we try to keep our focus on playing straight ahead in modern jazz, which is where all of us come from. At the same time, though, by maintaining, you know, our foot in the gypsy jazz door, because we want to be Godar fans, and we know we have there's a lot of fans out there that really like that side of things.
Well, the tune we introduced you with, Noto Swing, I guess, is described here as having been by Lulu Reinhardt. No relation to Django, or is it?
You know, probably. I don't know for sure, but yeah, that tune is definitely something that is of that gypsy jazz style, and it's a really fun tune to play, and it, you know, harmonically it has that sort of gypsy folk sound.
Yeah, what makes it gypsy?
Well, it's, I think it has that sort of minor key, you know, gypsy folk song tonality, kind of similar to what they call, you know, the gypsy anthem, which is the Russian gypsy song, Dark Eyes. And also that it was composed by a gypsy guitarist. And the harmony and the style in which it, the up-tempo style in which it's typically played, and the feel, the sort of backwards gypsy jazz guitar feel that we try to put into that song is a little bit different from the way we play, you know, standards or some of our own modern jazz compositions.
Okay, well, we'll have time to go out with one more track from the new CD. Paul Brady's my guest here on Live and Local, a member of the Hot Club of Detroit, who are going to be passing through Urbana on Sunday night and playing at the Iron Post. The show starts at 7 o'clock, and you can get more information on the Hot Club. I'm looking for your web address here. What is that?
It's hotclubofdetroit.com.
Easy enough. And then for the Iron Post, you can go to their MySpace page, Iron Post Bar, and get more information on their anniversary shows this month of September. So how about this Chopin tune, and one of Chopin's etudes, Tristesse?
Well, this is an arrangement of your friend, Julien Labro, and he's also playing bandoneon on this recording. And it's an arrangement of a very beautiful etude by Chopin, and taking classical music and arranging it into a jazz setting is definitely something that's been going on since some of the earliest days of jazz. And we've kept up that tradition on all three of our records, and this is our latest attempt to keep it going. It's actually a song that we've been closing our sets with lately, even though it's a ballad. We've just found it to really move people, and you got to give all the credit to Frederic Chopin for that.
So it's a fair bet folks will hear that Sunday night.
Maybe.
Or some other surprise. Thanks very much, Paul, for talking to us.
You're welcome. Thanks, Kevin.
And enjoy the rest of your trip. Look forward to seeing you on Sunday night.